From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Randall White in for Beth Ruyak on this Friday. Today is the deadline for California counties to submit their final results from last month's midterm election. All counties with contested congressional races have already submitted their tallies, so it's finally safe to say Democrats swept all seven congressional seats they were targeting in the state. Joining us today to discuss the impact of this is Keys to the House podcast producer and reporter Sally Schilling. And Sally, welcome back to Insight.
Thanks, Randall. Good to be here with you.
Yeah. So the most recent seat to flip was that held by Central Valley Republican David Valadao by Democrat TJ Cox. This surprised members of both parties, didn't it?
Yeah, this one actually was rated by Cook Political Report going into election night as likely Republican. So if it's a really close race, it's rated as a toss-up. A little further one way or the other would be lean Republican, and this one was likely Republican.
So it wasn't even close to the other
side. Yeah, we were not thinking this one was going to flip, and then after election night saw the votes coming in and start to go for TJ Cox, and then, yeah, he pulled ahead by, I think, about 6 percentage points in the end, so... Yeah, and both parties definitely were not expecting this one.
And we have a clip from the podcast, Keys to the House, that addresses this.
Yeah, so we talked in our final episode that's up now about with two of our regular guests, political data analyst Paul Mitchell and Republican political consultant Mike Madrid. And yeah, we talked about why this, you know, what they thought of that race. So here's Paul Mitchell.
Generally, what we do see is with these late ballots that tend to be more Democratic leaning in the votes, we usually see Democrats gaining about 2 points. And in this race, the Democrat actually gained 6 points, which was, you know, about three times more than we would have expected. And part of it has to do with just the fact that there were so many more late ballots in all of these races, particularly in these districts where they had huge field organization and huge, you know, ground campaigns to get these late voters to, you know, take their absentee ballots, drop them off at the polling place or do provisional ballots or make sure they mail them by election day and could be counted in those days after the election.
And so, Paul, you didn't see it coming. Mike, did you?
Did not see it coming. And to me, the Valadao state's really kind of the most fascinating seat of all of these. And we talked about this a little bit previously in the series. The Valadao seat really does meet all of the criteria of being really kind of one of those red districts where the whole country is either blue becoming bluer or red becoming redder. And here there's, while there's a significant and sizable Latino community, and that's always what has been the kind of the tantalizing shiny object for Democrats looking at this seat and always falling not just short but far short of expectations to get this. The reason really is because a lot of these areas that are rural are white, have a strong white conservative constituency, and voted, you know, and vote rather conservatively, seem to be getting redder, at least in most parts of the country. They have been trending that way. And I think the fact that Valadao lost, presuming he will, and I think he will, it's just a sign of how deep what this change, this break in the Republican coalition is, which I don't think a lot of people are talking about yet.
Can Democrats rightfully claim that they're responsible for this, or did they just ride the wave?
The same Democratic consultants that are gloating right now about what a fantastic job they did are the same ones that were crying in their beer 18 months ago about what a, you know, horrible job that they did during the Hillary Clinton campaign. There are larger tectonic, you know, factors at play. And it's great that you did a wonderful GOTV operation, and it's wonderful that you knocked on each high propensity Democrat's door 150 times. The truth of the matter is this election was overwhelmingly about the rejection of Donald Trump. And I say rejection for a reason. Five of our last seven national elections have essentially been change elections. So anybody who believes that this election is somehow a mandate for the Democrats is not looking honestly at our recent history, like our last 10, 15 years. The voters of this country, and I would even argue Orange County, if you look at the data specifically, are voting in it to check the party in power. They're voting against candidates and against parties more than they are voting for them. And so congratulations to Democrats on this last Tuesday's elections in November. They were the same ones that were rejected soundly 2 years before that. And if history is a guide, if they are planning on sealing victories across the country, they're probably not going to do as well as they think they're going to.
20 seconds or less from each of you. Do Republicans have a shot at recapturing the races they lost this year in 2020? Paul.
Well, if I was a Republican consultant, the thing that would terrify me is that this impact of these elections, these seven flips, nine legislative district flips, happened in a 64% turnout election. And in the presidential election in 2020, we're going to see 78%, 75%. So take this 64% of the electorate and imagine what the next 12 to 13% add-on to that will be. It is not going to be gray-haired women from Orange County, homeowner Republicans. It's going to be younger renter minorities and college students. And so if you're to take today's election results from this election cycle and make it, you know, 12, 15% more progressive, then I don't think you can win back these seats. Another added element to this is the timeline. The filing deadline for these seats is going to be December 6, 2019. These campaigns have a year to ramp up as opposed to a couple years. And we're going to have absentee ballots.
California has an earlier primary because the presidential race, they moved
compressed.
The primary up to March.
So we're going to have absentee ballots dropping in 14 months. And we don't even know which Republicans would be running for any of these seats, if people are going to be running for their old seats or if they're going to start recruiting new candidates, if they're going to have active primaries. They're very much behind the eight ball because of the time that they have until the next election being compressed.
And Mike, quickly, do Republicans have a shot at recapturing some of the seats they lost in 2020?
There's always a shot. I think it's highly unlikely. You're probably looking at maybe one or two seats. But the bigger point is this, which we're missing, is we're talking about Republicans trying to recapture seats in Orange County. Okay? I mean, that to tell you how significantly, to Paul's point, demographically things have changed and are continuing to change. We've kind of demographically hit that point where we're seeing exponential growth of these non-traditional, which are now traditional communities in California. Extremely hard to see how Republicans get back into relevance in the next generation, probably too, in California.
And that's Republican political consultant Mike Madrid. You also heard from Paul Mitchell with Political Data, Inc. And conducting the interview there on Keys to the House is Cap Radio's Capital Bureau Chief Ben Adler. We are with Sally Schilling, a producer and reporter for Keys, or the producer and reporter for Keys to the House podcast. She's joining us with perspective on the November election, which will be certified by the state of California now that the counties are sending in their certified results. The deadline is today, right, Sally?
Correct.
So Kristen Olson, the former Republican leader in the Assembly, California Assembly, who is now a member of the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors, said in the New York Times that this election was, quote, a major setback for the Republican Party, so much so that she doesn't think it's salvageable at this time. I mean, that really is a lot.
Right. So, yeah, and you heard Mike Madrid talking about this, too, that, you know, the Republican Party at this point needs to take stock and reflect at who they're speaking to. This is the smallest congressional delegation that the state has sent, a Republican congressional delegation that the state has sent in over 50 years. So Mike Madrid's been kind of ringing this bell for a long time, but hearing, you know, other Republicans having that same kind of sentiment right now is pretty interesting.
Sally, we are hearing a term a lot in recent days. It's called ballot harvesting. Speaker Paul Ryan said it this week in reference to California's election. Help us understand what ballot harvesting is.
Yeah, it's a law that was passed in 2016 in California. Other states have it as well. Previously, only if you had a vote-by-mail ballot that you couldn't turn in for some reason, transportation, or there was some issue getting to a place to mail it, you could have a family member or someone, a roommate or someone living with you, turn in that ballot for you. And then in 2016, California passed a law saying anyone can take your vote-by-mail ballot, turn that in for you. So even political campaigners could come take that for you. Republicans in recent days, like Paul Ryan, have been pointing to this law saying, you know, and calling it ballot harvesting.
Yeah, that's a newer term, right?
Right. And in case of the House, we kind of talked about maybe that's kind of a charged right term to use. The LA Times editorial board came out with an editorial this morning saying, pointing to that term and saying, actually, this really is just a ballot collection process. So anyways, Republicans are saying, calling it ballot harvesting and pointing fingers at this, that did Democrats abuse this new voting law to get votes in some way? And we talked to Paul Mitchell and Mike Madrid about this as well, and whether there really was any potential for fraud in using this new system.
Well, look, if the question is, are there opportunities for fraud? Of course there are. I mean, that's undeniable. Is it happening? I don't think so. I don't think, and certainly not in any meaningful way. I think that this is another reform that is trying to accommodate the social changes in people's lives and engage as many voters as possible. And I think that's a good thing. I don't think it's anything to be feared. I do think, though, that there is something a little bit problematic about the way our civic engagement, civic involvement is changing. And I don't believe that we should be having everybody go to the polls on, you know, on the first Tuesday of whatever month it is that we're deciding to have our elections. And I'm also really not concerned about what the tactical outcomes of this are going to be. And what I mean by that is, as I have been come under a lot of criticism since the election, saying the Republican Party is basically dead in the state.
You're one of several prominent Republicans in California who are saying that, including some current and former state lawmakers.
Yeah, and there's been a really strong pushback to that from both sides of the aisle. But I think those people don't understand what's happening, the size and scope of what is happening socially here. I don't believe that ballot harvesting was an attempt to accommodate partisan gain, or if it was, I don't think that will be the long-term effects of what is going on. I think that it's simply going to be a way to get and engage more voters into the process. So while I think that we need to be vigilant in ensuring the integrity of our ballots, I think it's equally important that we work to ensure the greatest participation possible.
They're calling it ballot harvesting. It really is just about ballot delivery. Like Mike said, it is being claimed that it's to the advantage of Democrats right now. But in the long term, I don't think it's going to be to either party's tactical advantage, because both parties will start accommodating this. The first instances of how this was being done was in special elections in 2007, particularly in the 34th congressional district race, where one of the candidates was having voters come to church and drop off their ballots at church so that they could be turned in. And that doesn't seem to me to be some kind of a nefarious practice. It seems to me to be a way to accommodate more voters in this new system we're having, where more people are voting by mail. And we want to try to reduce the hurdles for people to be able to get their ballots back in.
And I'm here with Sally Schilling, the producer and reporter for Keys to the House. Sally, just before we heard that Keys clip, we mentioned that House Speaker Paul Ryan referenced ballot harvesting, and California's Secretary of State responded to that.
Yeah, after Paul Ryan said, you know, California's system defies logic, Secretary of State Alex Padilla came out with a statement saying, you know, we're just ensuring California's voting laws are carried out and protecting voting rights. And it shouldn't defy logic that elections officials are really meticulously counting every ballot.
And it takes a while to do that. This has been, people have commented on the length of time it's taken this election to get the certified results.
Right. And to have all these ballots come in on election night and then have to go back and do some verification to accommodate these new laws, it takes time. And yeah, California certainly does take a lot more time than other states, and that's why.
That's our Sally Schilling. Cap Radio's Sally Schilling. The final episode of Keys to the House podcast is available now. You can get it at capradio.org/keys, right? Or, we always say this, wherever you find your podcasts, right? Sally, thank you so much for being on Insight and updating us on all of that.
Thanks, Randall.
Appreciate it. And we do have more information on our website at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio.
Here where you are are standing. The dinosaurs did a dance. The Indians told a story. Now it has come to pass.